From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. What does it mean to be white? Last month, a new study from the University of Minnesota found that many white Americans believe they're part of a distinct white culture. We hit this topic on our roundtable, but listeners and the moderator, NPR's Tony Cox, thought we hadn't gone far enough.
You know, it's too bad. We should have had a white person on the panel today. We really to have this discussion be more comprehensive. So if we revisit it, which we probably will, we're going to invite someone white.
Absolutely. Make sure you get a conscious white person, not an unconscious.
Yes, we will definitely do that.
Again, that was Tony Cox with Roundtable regular Julianne Malveaux. So to make good on our promise, we reached out to one of the authors of the whiteness study, Douglas Hartman, an associate professor of sociology at the University of Minnesota. We also got Peggy McIntosh, Associate Director of Wellesley College's Center for Research on Women. Together, they agreed to revisit the idea of whiteness and whiteness studies with Tony.
Given this nation's long Eurocentric cultural history, hasn't whiteness studies been the norm in America? And is this just slapping a new name on an old story, Doug?
In a sense, that's true. I think the innovation of whiteness studies, and especially critical whiteness studies, was not just to study norms and traditions of a essentially white Anglo culture, but to focus on to what extent whites understood the ways that they were privileged by being white and at the center of the culture. And one of the things that this grew out of was the sense of many race scholars in the 1980s and 90s that the problem was that whites didn't actually fully realize just how Eurocentric the culture was
and the ways that invaded them. I apologize for interrupting, but how can that be?
In some ways, it's an example of how deeply ingrained the white norms of the culture are, that whites kind of thought that race was something everybody who wasn't white had, and they didn't have to think about that. They didn't have it. To be white was somehow to be normal, which kind of exempts whites out of the picture.
Well, Peggy, you've been writing about this subject for quite a while. What changes, perhaps, have you seen in how whites think and talk about themselves, especially around the topic of privilege?
Well, the change is very slow. Like most white people in the United States, and most reported on in Doug's study, I was taught to think that whatever you ended up with is what you had wanted and worked for and earned and deserved, and the doors were open. That is still a widely held belief, that there are no overarching systems which you're born into and which carry with them pretty good predictions of where you're going to end up. As I see privilege systems at work, if you're benefiting from one of them, you tend to be ignorant of it because it does disturb this myth that merit gets you where you are. So right-handers can't tell you about a right-handed privilege, and many men can't list male privileges. Many heterosexual people can't make a list of their unearned advantages that they accrue by being in the dominant group.
It's
very hard for people who aren't benefiting from a system of privilege to see it at all.
You know, one of the things that we did in preparation for having the both of you on was I conducted a very unscientific survey around the offices of NPR West here in California, which is very diverse ethnically and culturally.
Great.
And I asked for questions to put to you about the issue of whiteness, and some of the ones that I got back were interesting, and I want to put a couple of them to you to see what you have to say about it. For example, these days it seems like any time a white person expresses any pride in their skin color or heritage, other folks, including whites and other races, seem to think it's shameful. Why?
Well, last week on your own show, a man said something quite different. It was not punitive at all. He said, it's quite true. People of Irish descent, people who are Jewish, people of German descent are more and more expressing their pride in ethnic heritages, and that's fine.
Doug?
Yeah, one of the assumptions of the whiteness literature was that whites didn't have a very strong recognition of being white or sense of the importance of their identity culture. And that's one of the first findings, was that we found clearly whites do. 75% of our respondents said their race was either somewhat or very important to their identity. And some folks have seen that as expressions of pride and kind of being part of American multiculturalism. Others have been really worried that this is a sense of white culture that previously been taken for granted now being under attack.
You know, you bring up a very interesting point, and it is one that we actually did address during our roundtable discussion a few weeks ago. Here's that comment.
There's an identity issue with whiteness that I think many whites now feel threatened because you're beginning to see the numbers shift towards more people who are black and brown. But for the longest time, I've always said, I think there needs to be a full discussion of this issue of white privilege. White people need to understand and experience the flip side. And the only way you can do that is understand your privileged position.
So that pretty much is the point that you were trying to make, Doug. Is that not right?
Well, yeah, I think where I think it's very clear is that whites have a sense of race, their own race being important to them. You know, you hope that that goes along with understanding privilege, but it can also cut, and this is the scary thing, the other way and become a defense or protection of that privilege.
Let me ask you, Peggy, because I know, I believe, let's put it that way, that people who are not white often look at whites monolithically, and black people hate to be seen in those terms, and I'm assuming white people probably would not appreciate that either. Are there regional variations or other sorts of variations to whiteness?
Yes. Just starting with the fact that your ethnicity, or if you want, skin color, mixes in with your status in all the other power systems of the United States or of the world. So you don't experience your life only through your racial ethnic experience, but also through class, through gender, through sexual orientation, through region. Doug's study did indicate that there are some specifically regional and political affiliations that go with a kind of denial that white privilege exists. But for each individual, there's a tremendous map of placements that one has in differing ways within the different kinds of systemic oppression that exist and systemic privilege that exists.
What are the misconceptions that others have of whites, the big ones?
Well, I think one is a little bit on this monolithic point, but that all whites don't think about their race. All whites don't see the ways that they're privileged by it. And I mean, that's where we've got diversity and variation. I mean, we've got a significant number that are able to think about privilege. Not enough. I mean, we need a lot of progress there, but that it's kind of the point that you said, I mean, that there is variation and diversity there. Probably the most important one of those, or the one that people are commenting on the most, is that whites are starting to think about, if not the privilege issues, at least the race, identity, and culture issues, more so than I think they did 10 or 15 years ago, when they tended much more easily to exempt themselves from those questions.
Is that because they feel they're in danger of losing that privilege?
Well, I think that's one potential driver. I think another might be some folks that are thinking that way might be developing more sophisticated and progressive understandings of the problems of race in the United States.
Does class have anything to do with that? Does the lower class see it differently than the upper class, the upper white class?
That's one of the things that everybody would expect, and we haven't found strong patterns on that, either in terms of income or in terms of education. There seems to be far more homogeneity among whites on education and income measures rather than diversity, which is what a lot of people, especially sociologists like myself, initially would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, may
what?
I answer your question
before
about misconceptions about whites from people of color?
Yeah, not just, well, from other people.
It seems obvious to those who don't have them that we've got unearned advantage. And I feel I was raised specifically not to know that. It's a little like what Doug talks about. I was considered to be normal, and other people had race. So I could understand discrimination, but the idea that there was an upside, or what one of your previous speakers called a flip side, the idea that there were corresponding over-advantages that went with others' disadvantage was completely new to me. However, after I'd written that paper and have talked many times around the country with whites and non-whites together, the skepticism on the part of non-whites that we're so oblivious of unearned advantage is what I see as very, very common.
Could I just piggyback on Peggy's comment?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Because in the aftermath of the study, we've been doing a lot of radio talk shows, and a lot of them have been with African-American stations. And one of the first callers usually says something like, "You're surprised by this? Come on." They don't believe that the findings about whites' understandings of their identity or their privileges, that it's so obscured as a lot of the studies would imply. So I think it fits with what Peggy was saying. It's like, this isn't news for
this
folks
isn't news,
who aren't
and yet
white.
Yet formally addressing it as privilege is only about 20, 25 years old. So that's a real question for history. How come the upside of torture, suffering, discrimination, oppression hasn't been named until so recently? If you're benefiting from any kind of privilege system, it's like having been born into a bank account that you can spend. It's your choice in the United States whether you choose to spend your unearned power to weaken systems of unearned power and make the nation closer to what it wants and claims to be.
It has been a very enlightening conversation. From member station WBUR in Boston, Peggy McIntosh, Associate Director of Wellesley College's Center for Research on Women. And from Minnesota Public Radio, Doug Hartman, Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Minnesota. Thank you both very much for coming on.
Thank you.
It's been an honor.
Again, that was NPR's Tony Cox.